It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Hello, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. What's happening out there in the real world?
Budget is in my world, both on the statewide, but more locally here. The budget hearings for the Mount Sue Borough budget have started this week, and they've had two hearings so far, and there's another one yet to happen tonight in the Willow area. Well, I did not go physically to the one at the Wasilla Menard Center. I did listen to the tape that the borough provided. They've done a good job of capturing those off-site special meetings that we normally don't stream, Mike. So they were up and ready the day after. So that was great. And I did listen to kind of about 2 hours, a little over 2 hours worth of testimony from the Menard side. And then on Tuesday night was the special meeting here in Palmer for people on this side of the valley. And there was a stark difference between the two bodies, that was for sure. On the Wasilla side, I think you heard a lot more people who were testifying about cutting the budget, also a lot more people testifying and their concerns about keeping their full PFD. There also was a little bit of discussion about the reconsideration of a ordinance that was passed at the last meeting in regards to education funding and a couple of amendments of the governor's amendments. That was actually quite a lengthy conversation, actually. So the testimony was first, again, as I said, it was more in line with a more conservative approach, I would say, about the budget and no specifics, again, which is kind of a little, I always think, a little unfair, Mike, to go up talking about the things you want to say, but not giving the assembly any direction on what isn't as important to you. So a lot of generalities there. But when they got down to discussing the item under reconsideration, which was brought back to the table by Assemblymember Mayfield, who had originally introduced the original ordinance on it, asked for reconsideration on it, he basically wanted to just kill the amendment, the resolution that was passed, which did happen. But there was another resolution introduced with the two governor amendments that were in the former, this is very confusing, on the resolution that they killed, brought by Ted Leonard, having to do with the two constitutional amendments that the governor wants passed, and he wanted support on those. Tagged on to that was an amendment that Assemblyman Jim Sykes tacked on about the need for the legislature to consider revenue streams. So it was a little bit of a statement there adding on to that. And at the end of the day, the resolution did pass in a 5-2 vote. You know, there was some pushback again from Mr. Mayfield, and also, not, she didn't say this time, but Ms. Bovey, having to do with, you know, we should not be politicizing what we're doing here at this table. So at the end of the day, they did pass the resolution. For what it's worth, Mike, and you and I've talked about resolutions and how, whether they have any teeth or not, whether they're worth anything, they're really just a statement of priorities. That took up a lot of that meeting. But the Tuesday one in Palmer was way different, full of educators and kids. It was surprising how many were there. Very passionate testimony, started out by the head of the teachers union, who did what I would like to see at every meeting, and that was talked about the former meeting and what was said that may not quite be true by some testifiers. And she talked about the graduation rate, which is 83%, pretty good, one of the best, if not the best, in the state now. She talked a lot about you know, kids and teachers were doing the best that they can, but the fact that class sizes are just unacceptable to get any higher. And there was more about that in testimony later in the meeting. Dr. Goya had a little bit of a talk talking about the mayor's letter that was put out to assembly members having to do with cost shifting from the governor and the bond obligation going to the district. They're quite worried about that. And of course, that's still in play with the legislature. We talked about that too, Mike. So that she gave a pretty impassioned speech about that. But all in all, it was principals, it was teachers, it was a lot of people from American Charter, Alaska Academy Charter were there. I think their whole board was there, along with the principal. So it was pretty robust conversation, much more positive, I would say, at least for education. And that was certainly the theme. I think there may have been only one other testifier talking about the budget in general. But, you know, I think what it was, I guess why it sounded positive to me was that they were people that were passionate about the fact that the district was doing a good job, not just with their kids, but other kids, and how well they felt the teachers were doing in spite of what the cutbacks that they had already seen. And also a lot of concern for what they're expecting to be a loss of teachers, as non-tenured teachers most likely won't be offered a contract at the end of the year. And they're worried about, some talked about as much as a third of their staff not being able to retain their teachers before the end of the year, by the fact that they may be either moving out of state or to other districts. There also was a fair amount of, I've forgotten about this, Mike, but just looking at my notes, there was a fair amount of testimony in support for tourism, and that the borough should not underestimate how much tourism dollar brings to the economy here, and that it is a very big growth area, and that destination promotion is really, really important. And that was good to hear a little bit of a different round on things. But a lot of talk about, you know, the shift of cost from the state to the local government, and there are a lot of people dismayed about that, and you know, sort of sitting in solidarity with the borough and not wanting that to happen. That was kind of the result of it. It was about another two-hour meeting. If it's any indication of last year, Mike, the meeting tonight in Willow always gets a good turnout. There's usually a very full house there, and I think they'll probably hear a mix of things up there of what's important to that part of the valley. Well, this will be the last public hearing that the borough does. They're doing them all in this one week, and they'll start deliberations. There was some talk at the table about changing the schedule, trying to adapt to what they believe is going to be the finalization of the legislature's budget, where they might know more, so they may extend their final deliberations based on that. Although that doesn't really take into consideration what the governor's vetoes might do. So I don't know that they, as much as they would like to prepare their final number based on what they think they're going to get or what they know they're going to get from the state government, I don't know if that's possible at this point. Just looking at the calendar and what the governor has talked about as his priorities and how they'll be able to do that little kabuki dance. Do you have any insight into that?
I start by looking at the 1st of July, because that's when they're saying a new budget will begin. So I think it's critical to work back from that point. The legislature has to complete its work. That has to be presented to the governor. The governor has to decide if he's going to veto it or not. And then the legislature has to go back and decide if it wants to try to override whatever the governor has vetoed. All of those things have to happen before July 1st, ideally. And we may run into a new budget year without having a new budget.
Right. And, you know, I think another thing that's watching the testifiers, I was really struck by the youthfulness of the principals. They've really hired a lot of, I'm very sure, quite smart and very energetic and amazing leaders for their schools. But, you know, if they're a 30-year-old principal or even a 30-year-old teacher or in their early 30s and this is their first job, they've come into a program that has no defined benefits. And really, they need to get 5 years in, and then they are totally vested and they can move anyway. So that little, you know, that hook and line that used to keep teachers here for a long time, because of the defined benefit program that they could look forward to when they retired, they're not, that hook isn't laid anymore. And I look at some of those young people starting their families. I know one teacher talked about being the breadwinner for her family, and that she just, you know, not having a job is not having an option for
right.
her. And there is a lot of very heavy recruiting going out because there's a teacher shortage all over the country. So if you're already in an unstable economy, not really knowing where you're going forward as a state, and you now have this this not being able to retain to know whether you have a job next fall, and maybe you have family outside that wants you to move closer anyway, you can see why there's a lot of concern on these teachers and these principals. You know, we had a lot of moving around of principals when we built new schools. That's kind of inherent with new schools as they, you know, staff moves around to go to the new school. But that's kind of all settled out now. But this is now sort of imposing another big change on them, which there's cost to those change by teachers that may not be able to stay because they just don't have any certainty in their life. And I don't know very many people that really can, you know, kind of go on day to day not knowing what their income stream is going to be.
I would say the other thing to consider is other types of employment that require considerable training. I'm thinking of police officers, people
yeah.
who work either as volunteers or paid professionals for the fire department. It just, there's a whole variety of tasks where experience benefits. And I think in the past I keep coming back to the sense that people have that perhaps teaching is not in that category, where in my experience, and I've done a lot of different work in different arenas, education and teaching is incredibly focused activity requiring not only the hard skills, if you will, objective measurement of how much you know about a particular subject, but also the ability to relate to people, especially kids mm-hmm. who are very often in a evolving, changing circumstance, whether they're in a preschool or they're in a middle school. Anyone who has been around kids growing up and changing know that this is a formative period, and you have such tremendous impact. And my own sense is that if you will, kind of a bias to say that teaching is easy, may not be universal. But I think there are people who've expressed that, and I think that's something that has to emerge out of all of this discussion to say that if we're looking around and trying to decide what do we value most, well, I think, and it's been expressed best by others. Our kids and their growth and development and education is one of the most, if the most important thing we do.
Yeah, and I think also there's been a lot of, well said, Mike, that there's been a lot of false narratives sort of built around some data that's not reflective on the school, our school district anyway, as it is around other more challenging areas of Alaska. And I think the district has done a really better job this year, by and large, trying to explain what that, that testing, how it applies. And also, I think kudos to the superintendent, whom very, very, a lot of teachers spoke out about how pleased they were with what Monica Goya was trying to do as superintendent to keep everything, all these balls in the air. But also speaking about the social problems that are out there in the district, that this school district, you know, now is tasked with, challenged with, too. And I think people sort of reflect back on that area of when they went to school and how things were and how very different it is now and what the schools are coping with that maybe just didn't happen when you were in school. I think somewhere I read not long ago that only about 27% of the population is really has kids in school. So if you don't have, if you're not in your classroom and you don't see what teachers are trying to cope with, it's easy to just kind of shut that out. And so I'm very pleased to see them all speak up, and that not just about this issue, but just in general, Mike, that people are really kind of aware of the budget this year and how important it is to let policymakers know what's important to them. There's a special challenge out here because we are the only growing district. We, our composition, the only real way we have to pay for services, and I think Assemblyman Member Sykes had quite a lot of comments about this, is property tax. We don't have a diversification, and we don't have any real big corporations or, you know, other people to tax. So it does fall proportionately more on the property, residential property taxpayers here. And we also have a constant challenge with density in our outlying areas. And when you have less people, you more people have to pay more to have services. And I'm not sure that's really been explained to people very well. A lot of people have moved here for thinking it's cheaper, that housing is cheaper. True, to buy a house, it is cheaper. But a third of our population is driving to Anchorage every day. And the cost of commuting, you know, somewhere is around, I think I've seen between $10,000 and $11,000 right off the top of income just to go in and out to go to a job. So we shouldn't also ignore that, you know, Mayor Halter gave a pretty passionate speech about the fact that this is his 11th budget that he has dealt with the Assembly. And he has never seen a borough budget so skinny that it reduced their own operations by 1.9%, that morale is suffering for it, and that it's, you know, he's very supportive of schools. He's always been supportive of schools. He wants to find the right combination, but that we should recognize also that the borough budget on its own is been cut again too, and that all these cuts have, you know, that they have repercussions, and that we shouldn't forget that also.
Right. And one of the things I've noticed is that it feels easy, and in part it's because we have subcommittees and committees that focus on specific issues like education or criminal justice or roads and so on. It's easy to take them and maintain a silo effect where when talking about something, you're talking about schools, and then you're talking about this over here and then that. And each time that happens, somehow the connection between them all seems to get lost. For example, to my mind, a good educational system directly connects to whether you're going to be spending more for criminal justice, corrections, et cetera. Yeah. I mean, it seems obvious and I think demonstrable. Research has, I believe, pointed that out well. So when I look at that kind of thing, I'm saying, okay, yes, it's important to talk about education, but in the same process, it's not helpful to compete by saying, okay, this against that. If we spend money here, we won't spend money there. Unless you have a sense of how they interact with one another. And I think there are people who have attempted to do that, to point out that, no, you can't just go with one cut in one area. It's going to have a tremendous spillover effect. So with everything that we've been talking about now, low these months, the good news still seems to be more people, I believe, I don't have the statistics, watching, or at least I'm hearing people talking about gavel to gavel, watching what's being discussed there, being able to point to the arguments that are being presented for this or that. And I say at this moment in time, when we're looking at the Alaska State Senate and Alaska House, having come up with two versions of budgets which are both nowhere near as deep in terms of their cuts, et cetera, as the governor's budget, and yet they have retained their own perspective. I'm personally really looking forward to the reconciliation of those two. Once the Senate's done, the House, and they put it together and say, okay, well, how's this going to work? Because neither one is likely to emerge as the winner. There will be further consolidation in order to present something, which also suggests then if you have a pretty solid front by the entire legislature, then that suggests that the governor will not be able to just have his own way with the budget.
Yeah, well, the fact of the matter is you have to have a balanced budget. The Senate passed their form of it yesterday, but it left a gaping hole in the budget if, the $3,000 dividend stands. So, that's what the conference committee is about, is to bring both sides together and to come up with some logical solution going forward. I think I was sort of heartened yesterday just listening to the Senate floor session about, even though it's clear that there's a majority and a minority party, that they really, at least on the surface, act like they're working in unison together, even though there were amendments made by the minority party yesterday that didn't get through. I think there was a couple that slimly got through, but that this gives me, I had less hope at the beginning that there would be any type of majority to override any vetoes, and I'm beginning to wonder if maybe they're getting close to that number between the House and the Senate to override anything that would be really disastrous coming out of the governor's budget. And if, that of course would take a special session and that sort of thing, but there isn't a clear picture yet. But I think it's been, people are more informed, and that's always been our goal, right, Mike, by doing these shows, and is getting people more engaged and more informed. Yep. And I think people are much more involved. You can tell by these hearings. I've been to, over the years, these budget hearings that there'd be three people at, and, not 30. And to me, that's really a new element of things, that people are more informed on how the process works. That's really important. And also just standing up for what's important to them. One young testifier asked the mayor directly if he's ever thought about sitting in a classroom of 32 second graders and trying to teach them to read. So again, it goes back to that, sort of live in my world for a while. We need to do a little more of that, I think, in a lot of different areas.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for sharing today. The budget stuff has occupied many people's concerns. Increasingly, we'll do that. And we'll be looking forward to the next week or so as it further develops. Have a good week. We'll talk again next Thursday.
All right. We'll do, Mike.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.